When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast, where myself, Stephen Goldsmith, Gareth Barker and Rory Fallow are joined in the studio by a couple of guests. Bumper episode, James Hunter, who ran a piece yesterday just reiterating the point that Sunderland are in no hurry to get rid of David Moyes at the moment. So no doubt we will address that tonight. We did a little poll on that as well. We'll have a look at the results. And Chris Thompson, offer a Love Supreme as well, also with us. Glad to have you both in with us this evening.
Yeah, lovely to see you.
What a lovely time to be a Sunderland fan, eh?
same as normal, isn't it?
Before we get into the Moyes thing, I do just want to... I mean, you can't get away from Moyes when you talk about the game anyway, because I think some of the decisions, some of the selection decisions as well, shall we say. Any overriding opinion on that? Any overriding opinion on the game? Was everybody as sort of gobsmacked as me when the team sheet came out and Ndong wasn't in it?
Definitely. He's with Corney out, him and Defoe would have been our best two players. Kasri doesn't get played because he doesn't work hard enough and can't keep the ball. And then Ndong gets dropped for possessing the same qualities and then being told he's not British enough to be playing. Whereas Swedish Seb Larsson and Irish Darren Gibson are perfectly British enough, which maybe they are in style of play.
Home players, perhaps, he meant with that.
Yeah, maybe, but even if it's style of play, you'd say a British style midfielder would be someone who's hard working, likes a tackle, presses quite high, all things Ndong does.
Well, if you're going to generalise, it's hardly like African players are not known for the hard work in the middle of the park,
exactly.
Is it? So
I'd say a British midfield is boring, unimaginative and slow-paced, and in that sense he nailed it.
Well, that's what... slow-paced is exactly is what we got.
I thought, because you know you said on the Thursday, oh, well, we must have... You know, you said we've got a couple of knocks. So I was thinking, well, be rational, benefit of the doubt, maybe... Ndong has hardly trained or something, and that's why he's on the bench.
I thought there must have been an injury. Minutes. Yeah,
I wasn't surprised because I thought the same thing. And I'm yet to speak to David Moyes properly to find out what the situation was. Obviously, these things are just addressed very quickly after the game. But it's not until later I get the chance to dig into the detail a little bit more. So I assume, like Gareth said, that it was probably due to some kind of knock, because there were a couple of injuries mentioned, and obviously we knew that Cornet was one, but I assume that Ndong was probably the other. As far as the Britishness thing goes, I mean, loads made of that today. I think when you're talking about Britishness, he's talking less in terms of pure nationality, more in terms of Premier League experience, I think is probably the point he's driving at, which is why we're talking about having, you know, Irish Darren Gibson and Swedish Seb Larsson.
I mean we're probably being a bit flippant about the Britishness thing, but at the same time, I mean, it was you who brought it to everyone's attention, Rory. I read that in Don comment this morning. I was like, because I was hoping, I saw the piece, and in a way I was hoping that, oh well, he's going to say Ndong had a knock, that's why he didn't start him. And then, like, everyone's got their own opinion on team selections, right? So, and I'm sure there's people out there who don't rate Ndong. In fact, I know for a fact there are people who think he's like terrible. But I think he's our best midfielder. I think a lot of people would suggest that
we have to play our best players.
You've got to play your best players, and to drop him because he is this Britishness comment, and then, you know, obviously you troll him back through. Again, this is something that's...
Yeah, he said about
Sunderland.
Jones, he said about Jilabodji.
Yeah, trying to get more Britishness into Jilabodji. And yeah, it can, you can construe it as nitpicking, or if you like, But the thing is, it doesn't come on the back of success. It comes on the back of consistent defeat and consistent failure, and it just ends up sounding. You end up sounding a bit deranged. Like, so after the game, the thing that there's a few things that have really annoyed us in the last week or so, where I was a bit more on the fence about Moyes, and we have talked about it and said, you know, kind of got to take our medicine, and he'll be the person who's here for the long term. And so after the game, in a game where we kept a clean sheet, why is he talking about the fact that Kone was injured on the Thursday and it caused this problem and that problem? Irrelevant in the game.
Yeah. Well,
irrelevant in the game.
See, that might be maybe the formation he would have.
That I can help you with. That I can help you with, because I have spoken to David Moyes about that. And the point is, there's more to defending than simply clean sheets. He's talking about use of the ball from the back. And he felt that you get better use of the ball with Kone in there.
Even so though he's played Jason Denayer in central midfield.
Well, it might not have been Jason Denayer that was dropped. It might have been a back four.
It could have been a back three because we've had success at that season. Yeah. And he scrapped that on the back of two Gabbiadini goals.
But what I would say with the back three, though...
But he could still put Djilabodji in if you want.
He's brought Lescott in. He's brought him in for a reason. Why not use him? And that back three, not necessarily what it does for us defensively, it does a lot more for us higher up the pitch.
Yeah.
How many times did Januzaj, actually, to be fair, made the best out of a bad job on Saturday.
Yeah,
I thought he was our best player. Yeah, but how many times did he get the ball and was just had three Burnley players around him, and Defoe was like a man on a desert island. He was that far away from
Januzaj was getting the ball launched to him shoulder height, head height. Basically, that guy over there can do something with it. Let's just get it to him as quickly as possible, which ironically we kind of do want in a way, because we have been encouraging them to go more direct, but that's not the kind of player to do it, is it?
No.
And I mean, the centre midfielders, you mentioned slow-paced, and this is going back to when we first started doing the podcast with Martin O'Neill's final few days, and it's almost going back to that where the midfielders are looking about and just who wants it. And it was really frustrating me. I was sitting there thinking, if this is the best you can offer against a side who looked as frightened to win the game as we were, then I'm not even contemplating staying up anymore. I'm now just worried that we're not going to get the 30 points and make a total
embarrassment
of ourselves. I'm now almost resigned to the fact that, right, we're going down. Please just make it look respectable and get the 30 points.
Because at least if you go down fighting, gives you a bit of hope for next season, doesn't it?
That's an awful place to be as a football fan, though, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Like, it's hard to see. This is as bad as we were in those first 10 games where we weren't winning.
So one win in 13, I think we've got.
Where we can't see what the idea is again. There doesn't seem to be a plan. We've gone four games without scoring a goal.
There's not one, is there?
Yeah, well, we knew this 4-3-3, we knew back in November, didn't work without a big target man up front. So why has he gone back to playing it now?
I guess you go back to the question. Fair enough. What else do you do then?
He could have gone to that back three. He could have gone back to that 3-5-1-1.
I'm saying with no Victor and Ichibi, if you've got no big striker, then how do you...
Try and do that 3-5-1-1, which he's done without Anitri, which got us a 4-0 win at Crystal Palace and got us a 0-0 draw with Tottenham.
Change some of the personnel in the team, you know.
Well, he did that and everybody kicked off because he dropped them.
So the player who's been playing reasonably well.
I'm being flippant, but my point is,
again, going back to Kasri, people have their opinions on Kasri, but
My point is, it's easy in hindsight, isn't it? Because you know what the outcome is, and you say, well, why didn't you do this? But obviously, you draw 0-0 against Burnley, create five chances. If one of those goes in, nobody cares. Nobody cares, and everybody says, well, that was all right. Well, you know, you dropped in Dong, and we won 1-0, etc., etc.
But that didn't happen, did it?
I know, that's what I'm saying. You've got the benefit of hindsight. It's easy to pick holes after the event, isn't it?
But I think people in foresight have made suggestions that, you know, maybe he needs to try and best utilise these players, and every week they aren't.
I mean, one of our best chances came because Oviedo was in a much further advanced position and could get that ball over the top to Barini. If he's playing that 3-5-1-1, that's Oviedo's starting position, and he's got a chance to do that a little bit more. I'd see why he actually did play Rodwell, to be fair, for height, because we've been murdered in the air when we've played Burnley this season, but And Dong wasn't the one to drop. Yeah. Not even necessarily Gibson, Larson. Oh, yeah. I'm a massive Larson apologist, but ever since he's came back this season, he doesn't look up to it, and I don't understand why. I know he does get substituted now and again, but I don't understand how he keeps starting at the moment.
He didn't really have an assist to his name when Billy Jones decided to score. And that was like the Seb Larson of all, wasn't it? But of course, he's not getting those positions, probably just because his legs are gone. But you talk about it.
But I don't mean it's necessarily a dig towards Larson. It's not, he's aged and he's had a bad injury. It's not his fault. But
I mean, that Billy Jones think the myth as well is just
what can you say? It speaks for itself, doesn't it? Who do we think the cheer was for? Larson going off or Kasri coming on?
That was an interesting one.
Yeah,
because there was split opinions, and a couple of my friends were like, "That's bad crack, booing Larson." I says, "I'm pretty sure that that's an ironic cheer for eventually bringing Kasri on." I thought it was for Kasri. But it's interesting how that splits opinion, isn't it?
I bet not everyone was doing it just for Kasri, but I think that is.
I think Larson's got enough in the bank with Sunderland fans not to be ironically cheered when he substituted, though. You would think.
It wasn't as though he was bad, was it? Yeah. You know, it wasn't as though his performance was rank. You know, he put in a great delivery. Should have scored himself. Do you know what I mean? He was hardly the worst player on the pitch.
Mm-hmm. He's just average, isn't he? I mean, this is what we are now. I mean, this is where we are, picking the bones out of. I mean, it's interesting. On Twitter, you kind of tweeted, Chris, about how you actually thought. You know, I think you used the words "were unlucky" or "unfortunate," maybe not to win the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, to be honest, seeing us create five chances was actually quite positive for me, because there's been home performances this season where we just haven't looked like creating anything. And then, obviously, when the ball falls to Billy Jones, it's not who you want. And then the other chances, perhaps Barini could have done better with the two. But the very fact that we're creating chances was a positive sign for me. But then, I was a little bit surprised to see us booed off at full time.
But it's almost like, you know, we're so pathetic that when we actually finally like do something that's above to a mediocre level,
it shows how beaten down we are.
That was quite good,
because while we were still unlucky,
it's below par, because you're playing a team. I haven't researched this, but Burnley must have the worst away.
Yeah, I think
that's their third point.
They must have the worst away form in the country, in the 92 teams,
the worst in Premier League history.
I'm saying this season, 92 teams. There must be one that's won a game, or everyone must have won a game away from home once. Yeah. In the 92 teams,
even we've won a game away from home, and we're one of the worst teams.
Derby on 11 points, Sunderland on 15 and 19 points, all won games away from home on the season. So it puts it in perspective how bad they are now. I know it almost sounds simplistic to say that, because they're a decent team, Burnley, but the form is so different at home to it is away, and they were there for the taking as well. That's a frustrating thing. You thought a little bit, just ramp this intensity up a little bit, and they're going to panic at you. It was almost like when Wimbledon tried to let us win and beat us 1-0 to relegate us in 1997 was what I was thinking of, because they tried everything they could to let us win that game, and they ended up beating us. All we needed was a Jason Yule figure to go up the other end and score in the last couple of minutes. But I was sitting there, and it is depressing. Is there anybody in the room who thinks Sunderland will stay up?
No, not at all.
No, Chris?
No, to be honest.
You thought about that too. You didn't answer straight away there.
It's a weird thing this season, because I've always thought with the previous seasons, obviously we've seen enough relegation battles to last a lifetime, but the last few seasons we've always had the talent there to pull it out if we have some sort of kind of motivation, inspiration, like a moment of genius from the manager. But I don't think we have the talent there this time, and I don't think we have the motivational genius from the manager, because I don't think Moyes is capable of that anymore. I always thought with the previous managers that, you know, with Allardyce, he's always got a trick up his sleeve, like, because he's just that's just the type of guy he is. Like, he's a mad head, you know what I mean? With Moyes, he's completely lost it. Like,
is that team as bad on paper as people are saying? You have a look at that starting 11 on paper, and you see some of the names on that team sheet: Barini, Anazai, Defoe, front.
I think it's an awful team, to be honest.
They're better than 20 points. They're definitely better than just 20 points this season.
Yeah, well, but you've named the best players by a long shot. There, you've got players in that team that, you know, they shouldn't be in the league, you know what I mean? And the thing is, going back to what you said when I was on this podcast a couple of times ago about what you guys said about buying players and replacing players with players who are worse than the player than you're replacing. And that's, we're stuck in a situation now where you're playing Billy Jones at right back, and Moyes has already brought in two players to replace Billy Jones, and they can't even get in the team because Billy Jones is still the best player. And he's
brought them in.
Yeah, and he's brought them in. And with Cornier, with him injured, you've got Lescott, who he's brought in, you've got Djilabodji, who he's brought in, and then you'd rather have a centre midfielder playing on loan, playing at centre back, instead of Djilabodji, who he's kind of champion from the start, bring them in. And also he's dropping Cornier, Ndong now, and he's persevered with Ndong, contradicting Ndong's form, which, in fairness, has improved all the way through the season. He's gotten the point now where he's got a running game, so he's actually got a grasp of the style of football we're playing and how the Premier League, the pace of the game and stuff like that. So he's decided to drop him and bring in Rodwell, and fair enough, Rodwell did all right, but that's kind of undone the whole progress that we've had with Ndong throughout the season, because he hasn't got a clue what he's doing, and now he's just trying anything. And
it all just felt a bit, that's a thing, it feels a bit like, oh, well, let's change, let's make a change. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's changes for change's sake. It doesn't feel like there's an idea behind it. It kind of feels a bit like, I don't know, it's just a little bit the Bruce, let's just chuck loads of strikers on and hope to score. That I thought it was actually a bit embarrassing in that second half when, at about 60 minutes, Kasri, Djilabodji and Dongo went out to warm up together.
Yeah.
Djilabodji warmed up, and I know O'Shea had a knock, but Djilabodji did not sit down again for half an hour. So he's just running up and down the touchline with his shorts on. And Dong had a bib on for 10 minutes with over his top. Say, well, what are you doing? Like, yeah. Kasri was running up and down there, just thought, do something. Like, yeah. What are you actually waiting for? Like, do you think that Darren Gibson's going to suddenly pull something out of the hat? Because, I mean, he's a car horse. Like, offers nothing. Rodwell, that's a thing. It's like, oh, he did all right. It's because his base level of performances were generally awful.
That it's because the standard's so low that when someone does something that's not terrible, it's like, oh, that's an improvement, isn't it? We're getting better now.
And it is. The expectation levels are so low of what we expect now. And it's like you do wonder about what kind of team are we? What kind of club have we become? What kind of supporters have we become? And, you know, we're not really the... I mean, I know when Murray went, there was the protest, but I wouldn't say that was like a mass protest. I mean,
it wasn't people marching through the city with like a coffin or anything like that. We've never protested to that extent in the history of the football club.
So that's not something we do when people just walk out, and that's apathy personified. People just walking out of a game, people get criticised for doing that, like you're not a proper supporter. It's like, well, what are we supposed to do? We get kind of force fed the idea that David Moyes is better than Sunderland, that we're almost, he's got no control over the situation, that we're almost lucky to have him. We're a club that sacks managers, so we can't possibly sack a manager because it'll be, oh God, Sunderland has sacked a manager again, typical Sunderland. So we've got to stick with Moyes, whether you rate him or not. This is a person who, talking about frustrations, this is somebody who actually, we talk about players in a squad, and say Van Aanholt was a great example. He needs another player needs a left back to come in and put pressure on it to improve his performance. This player, the ex player, needs another player in his position who's going to give him a kick up the backside because his place is under threat. David Moyes' job is not under threat whatsoever.
Yeah.
So he's got there's no motivating factor for him, because his attitude to me reads as, well, you know, I can just go off somewhere and get another job elsewhere. So it doesn't bother me. If you get rid of us, I'm here, I'll do this rebuilding job, that's in the bag, my 4-year contract, that's not under pressure, my job's not under pressure. So there's no pressure behind the decisions that he's making.
And that's probably why the supporters are so apathetic. They know that we'll probably get to this poll
and that's it. Whether you agree with Moyes in or Moyes out, whatever,
you know,
the fact that he's not being put under any pressure,
even if you don't, even if you're not behind let's say for supporters who do think you should go, the reason they're probably so apathetic and just walking out and not really showing much passion, shall we say, is because they're like, well,
he's
safe as houses. What can I do?
Well, let's segue us into the Moyes conversation then from the game. There may or may not be a little advert in place, and if there is, that's now.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back. If there wasn't if there wasn't an advert, that was just a little piece of music for you.
I really enjoy that product myself. I would endorse it. It's probably like something awful, nappies or something like that.
Nappies are good. They're
nappies
useful.
For men.
Nappies for men. Men nappies.
Tenor men. Whatever it's called, isn't it?
A lot of those could be dished out and used at the stadium like then. Right, we did do a poll then, and just shy of 1,000 people voted on it. Moyes in or Moyes out, and this is. Had a massive swing again from last time we did this poll, and that is that only 34% of people said Moyes in, meaning 66% of people said Moyes out. Now that's, you know, there's no way you can say that reflects the entire fan base. It's just the few people who are into social media and on Twitter, but there's certainly, I still sense it's split in opinion. I don't know what you guys think about the Moyes in, Moyes out. I wouldn't say it's totally in the outcamp. For example, I would say 50% of the people I go to the match with want to keep him at all costs for next season, and the other 50% think it's time for him to leave. Does anybody have a very strong opinion on this? James, I know that you know what the situation is, that Moyes will be here long term. Can you see the point Gareth was mentioning there, what it might do to fans and players if everybody just sort of just accepts that's it? And there's no pressure on the situation at all.
I can see the logic of that you know, that's not lost on me at all. I worry from the point of view that if Sunderland make another managerial change at this stage of the season, the club loses all credibility. If it turns around and says last summer, we're now going to stick with our manager and stick to our guns, we're through with this changing, and then it changes manager at this stage, you know, all credibility's gone. If people, you know, here in this studio and certainly in the fan base at large, have already accepting that the club will be relegated, so who's going to come and take the job, and where do you go from there? Who's going to come in? It's very easy to say let's sack the manager. It's very hard to then say right, and this is the guy I want to come in and fix the situation. That's the difficult bit, and nobody ever gets that far. I mean, when you think about the managerial situation, I remember at Everton just a few weeks ago, the away fans were singing David Moyes' name in the second half. So it's certainly very, very.
I'd be singing his name if he didn't manage my team.
No, I say it was the away fans. It was the Sunderland fans. So it was definitely the fans that are gone there to follow Sunderland. It wasn't the Everton fans. So this is my point. I think that the club's trying to change what it's done behind the scenes. And As I said earlier in the season in a piece, you know, 5 years of bad management for all levels within the club has now caught up with it, and that's what you're seeing.
But at the same time, I don't think that necessarily means that David Moyes is the right person just because. Just because we've sacked other managers before, we've got it wrong before. It doesn't mean this time we've got it right because we're going to stick with them. Because I mean,
that's true. But what we know is that constant managerial turnover doesn't get you anywhere.
Well, I guess they'd argue it keeps you in the Premier League because that's why. That's what the whether I'm That's a different debate.
That's an interesting point.
I mean, that's their primary motivating factor in it, from a club perspective, that they want to stay in the Premier League.
But I asked somebody this on Twitter last night, and I'll ask you lads here in the studio. If somehow finishing 17th this season and surviving by the skin of the teeth all over again with David Moyes or with another manager in charge and another season of this next season, you know, where's the fun in that for a Sunderland fan? Do you not want to win games? What do you want to do? Win another 8 games next season? Something like that. It's a pretty grim prospect, clinging on by your fingernails every season, isn't it?
Well, I actually felt that this season. I know this is kind of a stupid thing to say, but I actually felt it would be a bit different this season because we finished really strongly last season, and then this was our opportunity to kind of get out of that cycle. And then with 2 poor transfer windows, we're in the same position. Obviously, injuries as well, because I can't remember an injury crisis like this.
That's been the big difference this time. We were talking.
Overlook that.
You were saying earlier. You were asking the other lads whether they thought Sunderland would get relegated. You didn't ask me. The reason
it was for the studio.
That's quite all right. Well, the odds are that Sunderland are going to get relegated. There's no doubt. That's the way things are pointing. But there again, they've pointed that way in each of the previous 4 seasons at this stage as well. So you can never say never. However, you've got to say that's the way it's looking. But this time, the thing is, the injuries. When you've got a poor squad like Sunderland have got, when you've got a squad that's low on quality, the last thing, one thing that you can't afford is to have your better players, your Lee Cattermoles, your Victor and each of his in this case. You can't afford Duncan Watmore's. You can't afford to have these people missing all season. A team in Sunderland's situation can't afford to carry knocks and injuries, serious injuries, to their best players.
Well, I guess we can't pretend that we didn't know that Cattermole wouldn't have a spell, because he always does. That Anichebe wouldn't have a spell. That Kershaw wouldn't have a spell.
Yeah.
Pienaar, people like that. Gibson, who's injury prone. John O'Shea was injury prone.
John O'Shea's barely had an injury. Lee Cattermole, you say about having a spell. Well, his spell's lasted since September.
Yeah.
That's not a spell.
He's not adverse to a good 3 or 4 months out with an injury, though, is he?
No, but in each of the last four seasons, he's been a key person at the end of the season. He is the person that brings the competitive edge that drags him. He's not the best player in the squad.
Great. But my point is that if you're going to prepare, my view is that I think it's naive to. Yes, we've been unfortunate that we've had, say, the knee injuries to Pickford and McNair and Watmore, definitely. But I think it's a bit naive to kind of fill your squad full of injury prone players and then be surprised when they all get injured. And they've all been injured at once. So if they've all been injured at once, I guess, there's an argument opens up. Is it something where you're doing week to week on the training pitch that's creating these situations? I don't know, but that I just think.
But some players like Jan Kirchhoff, who was immense for Sunderland in the second half of last season, he's only here because he's injury prone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it worked out in Sunderland's favour last year. He didn't get injured. This time it's gone the opposite way.
It has. But I still believe there's been spells where. I think David Moyes could have done more. I don't think, like people have said, I think we should still be in with a shout now with the squad that he's got.
That's what I was saying before. This squad's better than 20 points,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And
I
to go back
is.
To in terms
it's not
of
great.
In
but
terms
when you
of
look
the
at
Moyes
the teams in the Premier League, I would argue that this is a potentially like when we look at the teams that went down with 15, 19 points. I think the standard was a lot higher then. I think the standard generally has deteriorated over the years. I don't think. That the quality is as good, and I think this is one of the weaker Premier Leagues that we're in.
Well, it was shown back in January there was a strong bottom six where any of them could have gone down, and people were saying in any other year, and it's kind of happened now. The bottom three would have been cut adrift. But to go back to the Moyes in, Moyes out thing, for me it's not a case of survival anymore. Like whoever came in now, I don't think would turn it around. I think it's different other years. I think it's too far gone. But as a supporter, I'm not enjoying watching David Moyes' Sunderland. I think just to take 2017 alone, from the games that I've been to, I think the Liverpool game on the 2nd of January, and maybe the Spurs game have been the only games I've enjoyed. And I can't see that. Right, let's say he's in charge in the Championship. I can't again see enjoy enjoying watching this brand of football, because it's not like we're struggling and you can see what he's trying to implement. You're watching baffling decisions week after week, which we've touched on already, a host of on Saturday. And in terms of credibility, I don't think just keeping Moyes restores any credibility to Sunderland. I think Moyes, you could argue, is part of the problem for a bit of a lack of credibility at the moment, and what is making us, you know, is one of the reasons people are laughing at us. He's came in a broken man from his last two jobs. I know obviously he was a success at Everton, but in football terms, that was a lifetime ago, and he looks like a man burned who second-guesses himself because of those bad experiences. The thing you're talking about having Djilabodji warming up for ages and Dong looking like he was going to come on for ages, looks like a man just riddled with doubt. Like, it's a bit sad.
And he's got, I know Bracewell's obviously had a job at Fulham a long time ago now, wasn't it? And he was at Halifax as well, a number of years ago. But he's flanked by relatively inexperienced, Bracewell's an experienced footballer. He's played at the highest level for England, one very fine midfielder.
In terms of coaching
and in terms of being on that touchline, it's almost like you've got some novices alongside him as well. So, and it's Stockdale who seems to spend most of his time in the technical area, giving out the instructions or whatever. You know, I'm not saying that Stockdale's not a good coach. He might be. I don't know. I know he's highly rated and, you know, people speak highly of him, so you know it's tough for them as well. So I don't know. I find it really objectionable. The main thing I get when people say, "Yeah, sacking manager is not a great thing," and you've got to give someone an opportunity to try and build over time. I don't feel as though the kind of conclusion I've come to myself over the last few weeks is that kind of tossed and turned over it a bit, and I just don't feel as though that David Moyes earned the right to have the opportunity to get us promoted if we get relegated.
I mean, the way I look at it, Gareth, is no manager now that comes to Sunderland, and not just Sunderland, lots of other clubs too, they never sort of own their own failure anymore because they turn up and they've got a plan, and it's going to take 2 years or 3 years to turn things round, and the rug's pulled from under them within 12 months, not just at Sunderland, but other places too. So they walk away and they go, well, you know, I inherited a squad. It's not the squad I wanted. I brought in some players, couldn't get rid of some others. You know, I would have done this next, I would have done that next, but never got the chance. So they never truly take the responsibility because they don't have the responsibility, because they're not there long enough to do what they need to do. And I think, you know, that's one of the biggest problems with the rapid turnover of manager.
I think
after 3 years, if Sunderland said, let's say, for sake of argument, let's say Sunderland said, right, we're going to give David Moyes a four-year contract, and by the end of his 4 years in charge, we want to be here. You know, mid-table, wherever you want to put that line. And then you said, right, and in that 4 years, if you get relegated and you come back to do it, then that's fine. But nobody does that. They say, we want to be in mid-table, and we want to be there yesterday. And we want to play really good football while we're doing it, and we would like you to make a profit, if you don't mind, as well. And you know, you're almost on a hide into nothing from the word go. If someone said, right, you've got 4 years, and that's where we want to be at the end of your 4 years, then you can put in a plan. But you can't do that.
I just think, I take your point, but I think, you know, a manager, say... So he's a, you know, to give a flip side argument maybe, say, so he gets sacked tonight, right? And then what I would be thinking is, I wouldn't be appointing a manager for next season.
No, totally. Wait till next year.
Because we're probably down anyway, right? I would say we're like, what, 90%, I would say, chances we're going down, right? I think what the players don't need, I don't think the players need coaching. I think they need somebody to motivate them because they don't look motivated.
Same thing as Middlesbrough, isn't it?
They look like, it doesn't matter what you can tell them to do, they're not going to be able to carry it out because they're just, confidence is gone. You know, they need to be reinvigorated somehow, and then that's the only way that like Di Canio probably did in a way, or, you know, Advocaat did, a fresh face doing something different, galvanising them and then building again. And then you get the summer and you go, right, who do we want to take us forward? Now we're talking about someone like David Moyes, like, yeah, he was at Everton, and that was, like you say, in football terms, a lifetime ago. Went to Man United or whatever, so it's almost like, oh, well, this is a name manager, it's a good manager, he's going to do this for us. But it kind of feels like he's pretty much, his shoulders are the slope of your shoulders, and you'll ever see it, like, right from the outset. Wouldn't it be nice to have somebody come to the club who thinks it's a privilege to be at Sunderland? Yeah. Rather than seeing it as some sort of, well
rather than who in their first interview says, yeah, I didn't take the job last year because I didn't, think I could keep them the up. You know, and then we're in a relegation battle, and then anyone I sign is going to be terrible. Yeah. It'd be great to have someone who inspires you as a supporter.
This is the best you're going to get from this group of players after drawing at home 1-1 to West Brom.
But I don't think that Sunderland fans want a manager that's going to come in and just say all the things that the fans want to hear. I mean, David Moyes was asked whether he thought Sunderland would be in a relegation battle this season, and he said yes, and he's been proved right, hasn't he? Had he said no, we'll be absolutely fine today, people will be saying the man's deluded. But you tell the truth and you're wrong, and if you try and pat the fans on the head and throw them a bone, then that's not as well.
Approached that in a different way, though, didn't he? I don't think he Allardyce never pretended everything was okay. He always said, look, if the players don't book their ideas up, they're going down. I think it was more the tone and the delivery of the way these things get said, I think.
Moyes is saying, look, the players aren't not putting the effort in. He said their ability is what it is. And when he's talking about the players that he brings to the club, it's very easy to say, well, this player X moved to this club for £5 million. Why didn't Sunderland buy him? Well, you know, maybe Sunderland tried and he wouldn't come here. I mean, you look at players like Robbie Brady. Robbie Brady chose Burnley over Sunderland, and Ryan Mason chose Hull over Sunderland. You know, these are players that Sunderland wanted but decided they wouldn't come here.
I wonder why.
Well, it's interesting, well, actually, because
there's a variety of issues, but I don't think the manager basically saying, well, anybody you're bringing isn't going to improve the squad, and then putting a £30 million bid in for you.
Yeah. Well, credibility is a word that James mentioned earlier, then Rory expanded on. And it's interesting because we all live in this kind of little bubble where we think we know what the rest of the league's perception of Sunderland is, but we probably don't. And it's interesting that our ex-managers and our ex-directors of football have actually moved on and done all right, actually. Like, Congerton's landed himself a job at Celtic this week, hasn't he? And Poyet's done all right. Done all right. So it's like, it's interesting whether the rest of football looks at Sunderland and thinks, oh, God, like, anyone could go there and they wouldn't get anything out of Sunderland. But then the people who have been at Sunderland have made, like, terrible mistakes.
And the different players, and it's recruitment after recruitment, window after window after window of bad recruitment, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not like these people aren't accountable for the mistakes, because there's been plenty of mistakes made by managers and directors of football at Sunderland, but Sunderland always takes the flack, because we're a club that always hires and sacks managers, and players move through Sunderland, they don't get sold on for a profit, so it's like, well, he's a failing club, let's just beat them with a stick, you know what I mean?
I think off the pitch as well, there's other areas where we've definitely failed in the credibility stakes in the last few years. And we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, so, of course, yeah.
And you know, these are things that people are aware of, you know, and I think we obviously follow other accounts on Twitter, similar sites to ourselves, similar, you know, or podcasters, whatever, you know, and people do laugh at Sunderland. People think we're a joke. That's where the whole thing comes from, with the people walking out and all that. You know, people do laugh about the fact we have a terrible start of the season. People joke about the fact, we only turn up at, you know, in April or whatever. You know, that we've become, you know, the unflushable turd, really, haven't we? And yeah, that's how people look at us. Yeah.
I mean, the average football fan's perception of Sunderland must be so low that match of the day can justify saying, oh, there's the Sunderland fans, they're walking out again, and there's nothing wrong with that, because we're an easy target.
It does get, like, it does feel a little bit like, well, almost the manager's compounding it from the things he's saying. I know what you're saying is real. I think you're right. I think it's fine to be realistic, but I think, like Stephen says, I think Allardyce had the balance right.
Yeah. When no one in the media fights your corner, it would be in the wider media, James. Yeah. I don't mean yourself.
Brew, James.
Yeah, yeah. We're all lynching him now. You can't see it. I mean, the national media, we're talking about match of the day when they laugh at us. So it'd be nice to have your manager fighting your corner for you. Roy Keane would often be quite realistic in what he said, but he still galvanised it. You know, even Steve Bruce did, to be fair.
Saturday is proof of that, because although there was no real tactical plan, so it might sound daft that I'm saying this, but I still really do think that just a little bit of extra self-belief would have made a massive difference mm-hmm. on Saturday, because the game was there for the taking. And you do feel that sometimes if you hear the manager say, you know, they're good enough to do it, they're just not quite believing themselves, they can do it, that kind of thing, yeah. And getting extra, extra 5% out of those.
If you go into that dressing room and you go, you know what, I believe we're in a false position. I believe that, yeah, we're not the greatest squad in the world, but, you know, I reckon we're worth an extra 5 or 6 points over the course of the season when I've seen Sunderland play. And I think, you know, with the right attitude together, if we all work together and all, you know, have the same goal in mind, trying to get as close to 17 as we possibly can, we can get more out of the squad.
He could be saying that in the dressing room. But then, we don't know what he's saying.
Maybe he put that sign up in the dressing room that the club tweeted on Saturday.
Say it in public. Like,
give the sign the job.
Yeah, but I just think it's impossible to disassociate the person, your boss, basically just telling everybody in the world that you're not good enough and your performance is going to suffer. Nobody can convince me when you talk about sports psychology and intrinsic and extrinsic motivating factors, and you look at Leicester as a case study last season. Those players this season have struggled under the same manager for whatever reason that may be.
It makes you wonder what he was saying to them last season to motivate them, that this season he didn't say.
It's results, or it could be...
So it's results rather than what he was saying, I guess.
Could be the doping. Self-fulfilling prophecy. Don't know. Allegedly.
Like Martin Bain telling Moyes, it's okay if you go down. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, really, if you get told that you don't have to be that good.
That's the thing. I think you give people excuses. You give people get-outs. Well, yeah, we got beat 3-0 today, but, you know, I did the best I could. It's like you didn't do the best you could. I don't believe that when I've been to a Sunderland game this season, there's been a game where I thought the players that we've got have, like as a collective, consistently done the best that they could. I always think that we're undercooked.
Robbie's Hull. Quite a good performance.
Well, we had that little spell, but that's an even more depressing thing. In 5 games, we like won 3. Yeah. We've only won 5 games all season. We've won the run 13-10. Well, two wins in 23 games at this current run and the run at the start of the season.
I think the one thing that seems to have really changed this season, or certainly I've noticed it more this season than in any previous season that I've been covering the club, is that every tiny detail has been pored over this season in terms of every word that the manager said, who he sent out to warm up and for how long, and whether they were wearing a bib or not. And those things are simple details when what really matters are the results and sorting the club out. And they become there's a 2-hour window after a game where Twitter is just a minefield of people pulling to pieces every word that the manager says, no matter how reasonable it might be. People are hanging on every word, and I've never seen that before with any previous manager.
I don't think Poyet had a bit of that.
No, I don't think so.
No. I think he did.
Towards the end, when he criticised the fans, I think he brought that on him.
But like you say, it's not like everything was fine before and this has gone really badly. Everything's been going badly for ages. David Moyes is a continuation of that. It's not like he's been a tonic to that. So I think the fact that his job isn't really under any sort of scrutiny means that people will be more sort of, well, what on earth is going on here?
They're going to hold him to account more.
You see that at other clubs as well. Prime examples recently, Alex Neil at Norwich recently, mm-hmm. Gary Gowers, obviously, who come on the show quite often when Norwich are in the Premier League, expressing those views, and you see that from Norwich fans. Paul Lambert at Villa, I think, was a great example of that, where I think at the front page of the Birmingham Mail, I think, had practically a celebration issue when he was sacked. I'm not joking, I think they did, because they hated him.
Yeah.
But they couldn't get rid of him, even no matter what he did. And I think that the fact that we're bottom of the league with the worst points total we've had in one of these, you know, terrible seasons that we've had recently, and nothing seems to be happening. Everybody else has sacked the managers and all of a sudden got better. So my view is, I agree about stability and everything, but you've got to make sure you've got the right person in place to rebuild. I think the jury still is out on David Moyes.
I think it's perfectly fair to say the jury's out. You know, I wouldn't argue with that at all. You know, I think that what you've got to do is you've got to set the thing into the context of the problems that the club has. And I know I've written about this earlier in the season. You know, the club, without putting too fine a point on it, you know, is in a complete and total state off the field as well as on it. And that is going to take a lot of sorting out. And it may well, in fact, it will get worse before it gets better. And I think that's what the background to all this is. And when I say it's going to get worse before it gets better, that is looking like it's going to mean relegation. But is relegation such an absolute disaster?
I'm
okay with relegation now. But
I mean, for example, Newcastle got relegated. They didn't like it one little bit, but
they went down fighting at the end.
And they stuck with the manager.
And yeah, because
the sun shines out of his backside. He can't do anything wrong.
Fair play. My point is, they got relegated under the manager and they stuck with the manager in the same way that Burnley got relegated under Sean Dyche and stuck with him, you know, and I think Hull got relegated under Steve Bruce and stuck with him, and he brought them back. All right, he went just before the start of the season, but he brought them straight back.
But again, each individual situation has its own story.
Of course it
does.
You
know, you talk about Steve Bruce there, obviously there's a club that's generally quite destabilised in the owners basically want to sell it. They're not really interested in the club. And then you talked about Newcastle, the situation there where it was almost like, we're punching above our weight here, lads. Yeah. And then it was like, you know, isn't my girlfriend the most beautiful girlfriend in the world? That was the kind of there. And then oh God, please don't leave us. Please don't leave us, Rafa. The only manager in the country, by the way, who gets called by his first name and not his second. And then you've got, I can't remember the other club you were talking about, but there's
Burnley.
Again, another narrative there. I would say a club with a relatively low expectations in terms of what they're definitely punching above the weight as a club in modern football, and that the facilities that they've got available to them, the money that they've got available.
But the larger point I'm making here, and this you know, this again will divide opinion, but from Sunderland's point of view, when you think about where the fans are right now, and you're right, the apathy, and I can completely see where that is. You know, you part with your cash and you turn up and you watch rubbish football and you see your team lose more often than not and all the rest of it. Perfectly get that. Probably the only antidote to that is winning games, and Sunderland aren't going to win many games in the Premier League even if they survive. You'd be better off to a certain degree with taking a step back and winning games, trying to get the fans off the floor for a start. And then give it another go, and that won't be popular, and fair enough, but there's got to be something to be said for it.
I don't think that would be the end of the world personally, but at the same
I mean financially it'll be a massive problem for the club. Don't get me wrong, but I'm talking about for the fans' point of view.
I agree
needs
with
to be
you.
A clear strategy to come back up while the parachute payments are still on. You know, that's obvious, and we will talk about it more on Thursday as well. But because we've said before that we think we do have, for the first time in a while, at least more saleable assets than we have had in previous years. We have more younger players who look like they will be able to play in the Championship more than we have in previous years.
Bringing in younger players with a resale value is obviously part of the part of the turnaround idea, rather than signing 34, 35-year-olds with no resale value.
We've got a few of them, right?
Of course. Yeah, but as Stephen says, you know, that there have been younger players brought in who do have a resale value. One of Sunderland's biggest problems is that for all these players that they've signed over the last 4 or 5 years, they've got nothing back for the vast majority of them.
They've got to be good enough, though, haven't they, as well?
Of course.
We're going to throw some figures on that when we do the show later in the week, Gareth, the Inn of the Light show. We're going to be all positive and talk about what happens if we go down or when we go down and which players we think might play well at that level and which players we think we could sell and how much money we can get, and we'll just have a little bit of a play around with that one. So thanks for listening, everybody. Just before we go, I'll get a. And I'll be honest, like the splinter's in my backside. I think with Moyes, I can be persuaded both ways. My instinct at the minute is telling me to stick with him. Moyes in or out, Chris?
I don't think it matters.
Chris, Moyes in or out? In your opinion?
In?
Garrett, Rory?
Doesn't matter for this season, but I don't think he's the man to bring us back up next season, so out for me.
James?
I say stick with where you are.
Gareth?
At the moment, I'm definitely in swaying towards the out.
Okay, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.